Hello everyone, we are back in your ear holes once more, this time dressed in rubber and spandex to bring you another classic episode of The Winners You Podcast. We are not the podcasters you need right now, but the podcasters you deserve. For newbies, we are your friendly neighbourhood video game book club, and for everyone else, my name for the time being remains David, and sitting 1,939 miles across from me is Matches Malone himself, Mr. Alex Aldridge. How are you doing today, Alex?
I would prefer if you refer to me from now on this podcast as Vengeance, if you would.
Vengeance, so good, good, good.
1939, year Batman was first created.
Mm-hmm.
1,939, very nice. Excellent intro, full of references that made me smile. Yeah. Something that Mr. Wayne doesn't do very often, does he?
No, he does not. He certainly does not. Although that's his, I guess when you're going to be dark and gritty, there's no room for larking about like in the old Batman and Robin days.
That was Adam West's remit. Yeah, that's for sure. Pure West.
There's a Batman game, is there not? Have I made this up? Where you can get an Adam West skin.
I think it's Arkham City. And if it's not, it'd be
you
Arkham
think it's
Knight.
Arkham City? Mm. Yeah, they did like a bunch of different skins. Because when we played Arkham Asylum, when I finished it, the only extra skin I got that I was aware of was some sort of metal skin. It was like Batman, Silver Batman.
It was not the done thing, clearly, when this game came out, to absolutely spaff it full of costumes. You go all the way to Spider-Man 2 on PS5, each of the two Spider-Men has about 30 costumes each.
Some of them are horrendous. Yeah.
There's one that's from Enter the Spider-Verse, you know, the animated film.
Yeah.
But then it makes Spider-Man like 24 frames a second. But none of the rest of the game is. So like the game's running at 60, but Spider-Man isn't. Oh, it's disgusting. Whoever greenlit that deserved castration or the female equivalent. I don't know what that is, actually.
It must have just... Yeah, Arkham Asylum must have just missed the, like, spaffing Batman costumes. Because I noodled about... So I looked at my... I think I've played about 5.5 hours of Arkham Origins.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go to the Batcave there, there's, like, a thing that pops up out the ground. It's like,
yes,
change
is.
Your Bat costume. I didn't get any, but I assume that had hit the era where it starts chucking costumes at you.
Yeah, it must be. They'd already done City by that point, so I would assume so, yeah.
That's true. So was it Asylum, City, Knight, Origins, or did we do Origins then Knight?
Yeah, Origins was like
Knight's the most recent.
The gap filler while we waited for the proper one, because it wasn't obviously Rocksteady that developed that.
Obviously, we'll get into this stuff, but having messed about, because you and I toyed with the idea of covering Arkham Origins instead of Arkham Asylum because of the similarity within this sort of time period, similarity between that and the Batman movie that we watched.
Yes.
When you leave the open world stuff in Arkham Origins, that is a good game. Mm. I don't know why people were so angry about that game, because like when you go to like progress the storyline, you enter like a more linear narrative driven area. Those areas are good, as far as I've done so far, anyway.
Okay.
It's just world bit is bollocks. It's just, you go here, press the left trigger next to this thing.
Yeah. Shoot down however many of those stupid radar things over and over and over again. And some of them are, like, under different layers that you can't quite get into yet, and it's, that was peak needless open world stuff. Maybe it was the nascent stages of it, but it still feels egregious to me at this point.
I feel like I always force this opinion on you and never actually give you a right of reply. But like For me, the peak of these sort of quadrilogy of Batman games was Arkham Asylum. And I remember saying at the time when you and I went to Eurogamer and were interviewing...
And Vincent.
Yeah. Concerned about the sort of oppressive nature of Arkham Asylum being lost in this future games. And like, I don't think that series benefits really in any way from being open world. Do you? Or is that just me?
I definitely felt it did when Arkham City came out, because it felt like a more complete sort of tactile way of being Batman. It felt like it added more of what you would want to be able to do as Batman. But I think if I was to go
as in like access to gadgets and things like that,
access to gadgets, prowling the streets of Gotham, flying around, zipping about,
yeah,
that felt, I guess, at the time more like a, you know, here's a real proper Batman fantasy, or a more complete Batman fantasy, whereas Arkham Asylum was more of a linear. Well, it's a Metroidvania. We won't beat around the bush here. That's what it is. Having gone back now. And sampling a bit of Origins, which was clearly copying City, and not enjoying the map splooge that it delivered very early on, and also having played Arkham Asylum, which I think low-key is a masterpiece, I think I would probably prefer Arkham Asylum to all of them if I was to go back and play them now, having played Arkham Asylum, because it does so many things right in a way that just perfectly fits this type of Batman universe that we were in at that point, yeah, which we've gotten out of as DC decided to start making more Batman films involving Superman, but have now gone back to again, probably to an even more extreme degree with the Batman of being just dark and gritty. And
it's a good point, one that I never really considered about the having an open world and allowing Batman to sort of prowl the streets is sort of very indicative of the character and the I don't know, what is it like, the aura in which Batman operates.
Exactly.
You're right. The thing I struggle with is always when it comes to these sort of games that make the leap into open world is what additive benefits and how are you making this experience better by adding an open world section to it? And I'm always suspicious that they're not, and that what they're doing is just adding padding for the back of a box quote, or because like the, you know, like I think we spoke about this in a text, or did we do it by, I never know if whether we're speaking about this getting recorded or not, but like today's sort of go-to thing seems to be live service and anything that, I mean, funnily enough, Rocksteady have fallen prey to that again, being forced down a rabbit hole to follow a trend rather than being allowed to make the game that they want to make. And yeah, to me, like that sort of era of games, everything had to be open world. I was trying to think, did GTA come out around that period? Was that why it was all that?
Four would have already been out by the time that City came out, that's for sure.
Saints Row would have been a thing, I guess, around that era.
Yeah, I think GTA 4 came out before Asylum. Asylum's 2009. I would put money on GTA 4 being 2008.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Arkham City, to me, and this again is from memory, but I remember being a massive fan of it at the time. Arkham City feels like it was it was probably, they peaked with that game of how to do the open world for a Batman game, because they had loads of areas that were still enclosed, like you're saying with Origins as well. The open world looked amazing because they hadn't shown us Gotham before. This was our first vision of like a next gen Gotham at the time.
Yeah.
And it looked brilliant. The architecture was fantastically designed. It was really like brooding and gothic the way you would want a Batman game to look. And then that was really, there was really only down to go from there without anything massively freshening the formula up, which they didn't do in Origins at all. Well, they didn't make Origins for a start. And then Arkham Knight, although it still looks incredible today, didn't add anything new to the table other than a Batmobile that was... I don't think anyone can say they weren't let down by that, because it was a tank for a start that just ended up with loads of shooters.
Like pull the left trigger and you could just...
You could strafe with it, yeah.
For God's sakes.
It didn't need a Batmobile desperately, but that felt like the only logical step they could actually take further forward from...
Kind of all they had left, right?
Exactly. When it didn't need to take another step forward, probably not. So, but where did they go? The first two games are like both sort of like peak prime examples of what they were trying to do. One's a linear Metroidvania with this sort of, as you said before, like a really imposing setting in the Arkham Asylum, and then the other one is open it up so you can see all of Gotham and experience all of this Batman lore, and then there was nowhere else to go but sideways or slightly down for me.
I guess the positives for Arkham Asylum, given that it's the one we played, is sort of Batman very nearly reduced to his component parts. He can't rely so much on the gadgets, although there are obviously the gadgets there. It's just Batman, his wits, and this situation that is quickly spiraling out of control.
Yeah, he's not in his element at all, is he? He's in his enemy's element throughout.
Yeah. Does Arkham Origins sort of... Do you remember? Does it finish at the beginning of Asylum?
I don't remember. Probably not, because I think there'll be years difference. It might do. I could be speaking shit.
Oh yeah, okay. Because I just wondered about that. Given that, again, like Arkham Origins, and then one of the first major enemies you encounter in Arkham Origins is Killer Croc.
It looks very different.
Yeah, he does. That's probably true. Probably a lot of years has passed. He's been hanging out in his little purpose-built cell.
Yeah, really special treatment for him.
Yeah. How do you want to start this? What's your taking your fancy, the game or the movie? Where will we kick things off, Alex?
Well, you finished watching the film today, so I imagine that's freshest.
It's incredibly fresh, yeah. What did you think of the movie? I guess it's probably the easiest place to start. It's a long movie. I don't remember it being that long before.
Do you think it's too long, or...?
No, not really. I'm trying to think, like, if I was going to... taking what they've got... Is there a lot of fluff? Not really. I think it largely justifies itself, I think, for the most part. It's a bit of a slow burn, but you know, yeah. I don't remember being bored. I think, like, when it comes to sort of 3-ish hour long movies, I always have to separate what the movie's doing with my own personal preference of 3 hours being on the long side for a movie. And I
completely agree.
Yeah, so I think in terms of what the movie's doing, it's absolutely fine. Would I have liked it to be a bit shorter? Probably, but that's personal preference. Mm-hmm. I think 2.5 hours is about where I want a movie to be. Unless it's a comedy, then the 90-minute mark's enough.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's really funny because, like, when I look at a film that's on the long side, as we say, I did try at times while watching this to think, like, this has taken me 2 sittings. It took you... 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
So I thought to myself, like, try and think of, like, places as you're watching this where you would cut if you were there a director, or where you feel like it drags a little bit. And because it has so many, not so many, but it has enough of Batman's rogues gallery dotted around it that I felt like it needed to give all of them enough screen time and build up for them to actually feel worthwhile for being in the film.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that Batman does a lot more detective work, and there's a lot more of, like, the dark moments of quiet. Because Batman is not a man with magical superpowers, so he shouldn't be flying around all the time.
I think that's what I like about
him. All action. Agreed, completely. So the only thing that I thought that would make this film shorter when I was watching it, because I'm not a director, and it's frustrating that I don't know the answer, was maybe Batman could walk a bit quicker when he's at a crime scene. Because he does amble quite slowly.
He does a lot of sort of slowly walking out the shadows and then standing.
Yeah. He can stop staring at everybody for a little bit.
This is only going to work in the visual format. But, like, whenever I was watching him, I was having a little giggle because he's, like, such an awkward nerd that he's, like, someone would walk into a room like this and just stand straight on. He goes like this. he stands slightly off. Even when he walked in to see the Riddler, when the Riddler was in prison. He walked in the room and then stood like this, looking at the Riddler side on. I was like, what? Just look at the man. He's not going to get you. He's through some glass.
Maybe Robert Pattinson just couldn't handle how heavy the cowl was, and his head's getting pulled forward.
Yeah, maybe.
Opposite for Michael Keaton, because motherfucker couldn't move his head. Or he couldn't move his neck, could he? He had to just, like, turn his body completely. That scene, actually, where he's talking to the Riddler, obviously the Riddler in this is really good.
I've written down in here in my notes, I think he's perhaps the best Riddler that there's been in a movie. Not that there's been many.
He's the only one that's not, like, kooky and stupid.
Yeah, he's like, that giggling and singing's, like, unsettling.
Yeah. But that, do you feel like, the smallest rankle with me in that scene, I'll caveat that rankle with the fact that he's been like the alpha for this whole film. Like, the Riddler is the guy who's causing all the shit. So this is how you would want him to feel superior. But in that scene where he's in prison and Batman's not, he feels so intellectually superior to Batman that I don't know if some people got really annoyed by that. Like, I can see why, if you're a huge Batman fan, which I am, but you would look at Batman getting totally outsmarted and be like, what did you do? Sort of like be like, come on, man, you're the world's greatest detective, aren't you? Getting mugged off here by the guy from Prisoners, which clearly they watched when making this, was like, there's the Riddler right there. Just fucking weird.
Does he play that role?
Have you seen Prisoners? That's a good film.
No, I've never even heard of it, I don't think.
It's like Hugh Jackman in it, and some kids get kidnapped by that guy. Basically, he plays the Riddler again.
Oh, 2013.
I'm just jumping to a random tangent here. Well, maybe not. But there's some of the casting in this film I thought was like top notch. Alfred, totally, Andy Serkis is a national treasure at this point, I would suggest.
Yeah.
The Riddler, obviously. Fucking Colin Farrell, man. Holy shit.
I Googled, because I was like, this actor's fantastic. So I Googled and I was like, holy shit, it's Colin Farrell. Oh my God. What a transformation.
Unbelievably good. We obviously don't see a lot of the Joker, which is, and what's the guy who is the Joker? Because he's massive, really. He's a guy from Saltburn. The guy from, is he in 1917 as well?
Is it in the 2019 Joker? Joaquin, it's not Joaquin Phoenix.
No. It's some like Scouse boy. He was also in that Banshees of Inisherin, which I'm sure you must have seen because that film fucking rules. Barry Keoghan.
Barry Keoghan, never heard of him.
He's credited as Unseen Arkham Prisoner, I think. Come on, lads.
Oh, he's in Saltburn, okay, in the Batman. Dunkirk, he's in Dunkirk.
That's the one he was in, not 1917, he was in Dunkirk. Yeah, he's the kid on the boat, isn't he?
Yeah.
With his dad. Oh, Jeffrey Wright as Jim Gordon was a good choice as well. I really like him. He was in. He was really good in Boardwalk Empire.
Is he the guy?
He's also in Westworld as well, I think.
I was waiting to see. He's the guy that's in a movie I watched recently, American Fiction. That was
yes, he
good.
Is. Yeah, I think he's an excellent actor. I really do. The only one I would say, and again, like, I don't know if this is actually a criticism, because I'd like to see actors who are primarily comedy actors be put in serious roles and nail it. It makes it like there's always this thought, isn't there, that like most comedians are pretty dark on the inside and they transfer well to like really dark characters. Robin Williams was a classic example of something like that.
Yeah.
And John Turturro as Falcone, very understated in that role when you can compare him to, like, I don't know, his stupid shit from like Big Lebowski or Transformers. So he played it. I don't know if he needed to be seen chewing in every part he was in, like the Riddler kind of was. But you could probably look at Falcone and be like, did John Turturro really go all out to make this character interesting, or was he just kind of like softly spoken and a bit sinister looking and didn't really do a lot? Was he a disappointment? I felt at times like maybe he was.
Yeah, I agree. It's sort of now you're saying that, it is, you kind of caught between having to create this character and give him a personality and give the audience to a reason to be invested either way in him, while also creating essentially he was the guy that was behind the scenes pulling all the strings.
Yeah, but you don't really see any of that. You just hear about it. So he's
you just hear about it.
Yeah, he's sinister by reputation, but when you actually see him, I mean, not everybody can be Heath Ledger with every enemy in a Batman film. Like, not that would be too much.
No, but if you're trying to portray critical exposition, and the only way they resort to do that was to just sort of go, what do we do? Oh, here's our recorded phone call.
Yeah, it's a voicemail, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that, actually, in hindsight. The other one I thought was quite good, and I'm not sure who he is, so I'm going to have to look now. Is it Peter Sarsgaard? He played the district attorney, Gil Coulson. I thought he played his part quite well. He's the guy that got his head blown off, that drove the car into the funeral.
Yes, yeah. He was a snivelling shit.
Exactly, and he just felt like that. He just played that snivelling shit very, very well, I thought. You mentioned something either said this outright or put this into my head, that the interesting thing about this movie is that what struck me was that Batman movies are generally about Bruce Wayne learning how to be a Batman.
I'm so glad this one wasn't.
Flipped it, yeah, and this was much more, he knew he was much more comfortable as the Batman. I mean, they even literally say it at one point, is it the Riddler says, when you've got your mask on, this is your true face or something like that.
And that's right.
The movie's much more centered around or aiming towards him coming to terms with and learning that they also need a Bruce Wayne. I actually wrote down a couple quotes that really highlight this towards the end. Yeah, he says something along the lines of, he's got to become more, vengeance won't change things alone. And I've written down here that I assume this is a reference to him admitting that if Batman is vengeance, which he says a few times, then he needs to learn to also be this figure of hope that he talks about, which I would guess would be the reference to him embracing the need to be a better Bruce Wayne. So I'm interested to see the sort of follow-up movie and whether he sort of takes the Bruce Wayne role, in quotation marks, a bit more seriously, and you see him being a bit more... The draw... I thought that was an interesting twist on that. I think the drawback of that is I felt that for a lot of the movie, because he was shunning the Bruce Wayne part, there wasn't a lot of opportunity to develop a sort of personality, and I felt he was quite flat for a lot of the movie. He was just this sort of, like you're saying, slowly walking moody guy. And it wasn't really until the end where he starts to embrace that sort of stuff. You see a bit with Catwoman and then all that bits and pieces at the end that he actually starts to come out a bit more. So I think if they're going to continue with Robert Pattinson being Batman, which I think they should, he's done a good enough job.
I think I said to you, I thought he was a good Batman, but not a very good Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Because Bruce Wayne is really, other than the enemies, Bruce Wayne is really the parts of the Batman film space, certainly recent ones, where you can actually have maybe a bit of light relief or some humanity to things, where his relationship with Alfred should be properly developed. And they do that towards the end when Alfred's in the hospital and they hold hands, and that scene's really well done. But for the most part, like, my issue with Robert Pattinson in this film is more towards the, it's not that he can't be Batman, it's that he just doesn't seem to be, because Bruce Wayne's supposed to be like billionaire playboy, he's supposed to be outgoing and you know, this kind of suave
of that.
He just looks like a teenager, really, like a moody emo teenager. And I know people were worried about that before the film came out, but he doesn't bring that to the Batman character at all. I think he does a really good Batman. Number one, you can fucking understand him, so that's a hell of a plus point in
that's
that.
A win.
What's funny is I was trying to look up stuff to do with Batman, the Batman Part 2, which apparently we don't know very much about. The main reason I wanted to know about that, because from the ending of the Batman, it suggests that the Riddler and the Joker will team up for the second film.
Yeah.
I don't know where you take the Riddler from here. He's done the worst things he could possibly do already. He's killed a lot of people in very horrible
ways.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
So he can't get more evil than that. Is he going to get more silly? Is there going to be a lighter tone to the second film because the Joker will now be in it, which implies you should have a lighter tone unless you're going full Heath Ledger again, which I hope Barry Keoghan doesn't want to just do. There was elements of that in his little speech that he gets at the end, but I think he's talented enough to give it more nuance than that. But as I was looking for that, I found out that 2 hours ago on the day we were recording this, which is the 12th of March, it's been delayed by an entire year. Two hours ago.
It?
Yeah. 2026, we're not getting it until now.
Has this been caught up in the recent strikes?
Maybe.
I guess. They also said, I guess, while you're looking it up, the other sort of addition to that is they've really set Penguin up to be sort of center stage now. He's taken over from Falcone as sort of
That'd
the big
great
boss.
For years. Because yeah, I could watch more of that all day long.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess they've got a few options, don't they? One thing I quite liked... Sorry, did you find what you're looking up before I ping off? I was about to ping off on a tangent.
Not really, other than it's... I'd forgotten that it's supposed to be part of a trilogy. And Matt Reeve... Is Matt Reeve the director? He was writer and director, wasn't he? He wants to develop this crime saga, and that includes a Penguin TV series. I wonder if that has Colin Farrell in it now. We've just talked about. Yes! There we go. So that should be awesome. That's on HBO. And I guess it's that includes, although it says it includes the Penguin TV series, I don't know if, yeah, the trilogy is going to be films and there'll be a TV show as well. But considering it was going to be 5 years between The Batman and The Batman Part 2,
yeah,
Robert Pattinson's going to be a bloody old man by the time the third one comes out.
Why did What's-His-Face decide not to continue as Batman? The last, because there was
Christian Bale?
No, there was one after him.
Wasn't it Ben Affleck?
Ben Affleck, yeah, he was a Batman. It was he Batman versus Superman, and then he made an appearance in one of the Wonder Woman movies while they were doing all that connected stuff, and then they just went pinging off and thought stuff him, and then they went Robert Pattinson.
Wasn't he briefly in the standalone thing? Wasn't he briefly in one of the Suicide Squad ones as well? Maybe the first.
Was he?
One.
Yeah. So like, so have we got two Batmans, or is this just like a change of course? Have they given up on all the connected? Now the MCU seems to have shat it. Have they just gone back to making Batman movies? Because they never really made anything else. It was, I mean, the Suicide Squad movie was okay.
The Suicide Squad was good. Suicide Squad was shit. But the more recent one that was quite funny with John Cena and was decent. I enjoyed that, actually. I hope there's not two Batmans. Yeah, so the Batman Part 2 won't be part of the overall DCU, which I guess the Joker wasn't either. So it does seem like maybe they're just doing a little bit of like, here's the popcorn bullshit Marvel ripoff that we're doing with Justice League and stuff. But if you're a grown-up, you can watch The Batman and The Joker.
Use your grown-up superhero.
Because, I mean, that's what this film is, right? It's incredibly, I guess mature is one way of putting it, but it's gritty. It certainly is gritty and dark and very, very serious.
Yeah, it is. And
which I'm fine with for Batman.
I'm fully on board with. But I mean, before we go into that though, the only other sort of character that, since we're on this, that I was wondering is that mayoral figure. I wondered if they were going to do a white, because I hadn't clicked the black mayor candidate's name, which it seems, I was trying to look up while you were speaking there. It seems like it is Bella Reel or Jamie Lawson. One of them's the actress. One of them's the. It's Bella Reel, like Real with, you know, the little line above the A.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, I wondered if she was going to be like, they were going to be in like Harvinita Dent, but no, she's got a completely different name. I'm not sure if I'm aware of her in the larger Batman universe or if. Yeah,
no,
I'm not sure.
I don't recall a character like that.
It just struck me that she seemed to be sort of filling the good side of the Harvey Dent stuff in Batman, in terms of like acting as a pillar of light for the community and stuff like that. So,
although Harvey Dent was the district attorney, wasn't he? So
was he? He wasn't a mayor, was he?
Yeah. So,
this is
probably just like a central figure that's supposed to be likable, even though she was a little bit silly and naive before she got shot.
Yes. Yes. I really appreciate it, and it's probably just a nice change of pace, especially given that where superhero movies have gone over the last 10 years. I just liked how realistic's not the word, but
grounded?
Sort of grounded.
There we go. Yeah.
Like the Batmobile is just a muscle car with a massive engine slapped on the back.
He loves a little motorbike as well.
He does. Batman's even suit just looks a bit more homemade, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that little the sort of Batman logo that he places back in there. Was that like a batarang or something?
Yeah, and he's got that stuff on his forearm, which is just like a leather pouch strapped to his arm.
He's got that.
And Catwoman's mask is just a knitted balaclava,
kind of cut off around the bottom. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Interesting to note. Two movies that we've covered so far, all about the chin out.
Yes.
Superheroes.
Yes.
Again, just shoot him in the chin. Problem solved. Can take a shotgun blast. Just misses his face entirely.
Yep, not even a graze.
But yeah, I like the sort of setup of the vehicles and the suits and stuff like that. They just felt a bit more grounded within the world. Yeah.
Completely.
I appreciated.
Absolutely.
I was very much into. I did find it funny in this, especially the cat, again, back to the mask, especially the Catwoman mask, that like anybody's fooled by these masks.
Oh, yeah.
It's so obvious who they are, but it's not as bad, I guess, as Robin or Superman, who just puts on a pair of glasses and people are like, who is this guy?
Does he have some kind of mind control power that he, who cares? Superman, yeah, stupid. That's always been stupid. But this... they went too far with it with Christian Bale, where he just, it's all like this, and then no one can understand him. So like, yes, we don't recognize your voice, but, and Robert Pattinson just goes a little bit deeper, but I'm fine with that. Kevin Conroy doesn't change his voice. Never did. He was always
just carries on.
I think, yeah, if you were to play Arkham City, I'm pretty sure his Bruce Wayne and Batman voices are going to be the exact same.
Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it, as well? Because, like, you know, Spider-Man's like the key one, isn't it? Well, no, Superman too, actually. He's the key one. They're the key ones where it's like, I can't reveal my identity because the ones I love will be in trouble. But Batman doesn't love anyone. Other than maybe Alfred, who... Alfred is supposed to be like ex-special forces, isn't he? He's supposed to be like a proper like hard man who's taught Bruce how to fight and protected the, you know, the Wayne family for years and years and years. So he loves Alfred in that way, but he doesn't really have anyone else to protect, certainly not in this film, because Catwoman doesn't really feel like she wants protecting. She wants to do it all by herself.
No, she's
as
fine.
She's want to do.
Yeah.
Old Lenny Kravitz's kid.
Yeah, the other... Again, to sort of link back to RoboCop, it's again like with the chins out stuff callback. Like, it's funny that we seem to have accidentally, like, the settings are quite, there's a lot of parallels between the two. Like, run down city, yeah. Lost hope, someone coming to rescue the city, mayor that's a bit dodgy, people come and fuck it up. Yeah, I just thought it was funny that we'd accidentally sort of stumbled into something with broad themes.
Yeah, very good point.
That intersected one another. There's one here, there's a bit here that I sort of fell down a rabbit hole today when I was watching it. And there isn't really any way to sort of talk this into the podcast, so I'm just going to veer off here. There's a scene in the movie where he is sort of, I think he's like takes off his Batman mask, and he's, as he's watching like a thing about the Joker, not the Joker, the Riddler, talking about revealing things and stuff like that, and he's like totally naked, and it's after Alfred gets blown up,
yeah, and he's drawing on
the
floor. He like
pushes the table out, yeah, and he's starting drawing on his drawing room floor, and he was like totally naked, and I was like, is this like meant to be symbolism in that he's actually sort of naked and being reborn to like face his demons and stuff like that? But then I realized that he wasn't naked, he had trousers on, he was topless, but then they had like fire in the background whenever he had his feet. So I was like, so is this meant to be?
Did they?
Him talking about, yeah, so there's a fire burning in the background, and as he stands up when he's got no shoes on. And I was like, is this meant to be like fire walking rather than sort of a rebirth because he's naked? So I started Googling fire walking and what it's for. And I might actually, in the video version of this, nick that scene and put it up because it makes a little bit more sense of what I'm talking about. But apparently, fire walking is a test of strength and courage. And it's a test of faith, which sort of fitted in with me, him, because this was all about his dad stuff and him sort of like rediscover what the being a Wayne was. Mm-hmm. Can he believe in him, both Alfred and his family and his dad, what he stood for as being Batman all these years? So then I found a couple, like, this was just straight ripped off of Wikipedia. I would love to pretend that I went on some sort of investigative march, but basically it was talking about firewalking again, to sort of follow this down. Apparently, social theorists have long argued that the performance of intensity arousing collective events such as firewalking persists because it serves some basic socializing function in social cohesion, team building, and so on. Attribute to the effect theorized notion of collective effervescence, whereby collective arousal results in the feeling of togetherness and assimilation. And I was like, right, okay, that I think this is deliberate because that makes sense, and that this he is becoming one with Gotham. This same study, I won't read it all, but basically it shows that when people are doing firewalking, and if you measure their heartbeat, depending on how close they are, whatever happens, a lot of people's heartbeats start to synchronize with one another, and essentially the metaphor being they become one in the same. Kind of assumed that this was what they were trying to say about Batman, and that he is Gotham. And he is they were talking about saving Gotham, and I guess to save himself, he needs to then go and save Gotham, or vice versa.
He does feel like that's his just reason for being.
Yes,
the being
exactly.
Bruce Wayne part is nothing, has no relevance on his purpose in life, does it?
Yeah. And this is all while this is happening, he's sort of like bashing out this mind board on the ground that he ends up standing in the middle. And I've paused it.
I don't know why he had
to
draw the
like,
Riddler logo in there, by the way. That was needless.
He's very good at it.
Artistry. No point in that.
Yeah, so he's like essentially like working at the different strands of the crime and trying to pull it together with the Riddler at the centre, but also him at the centre as well, which he also doesn't realise until the Riddler tells him. But anyway, he's got like the sins of my father, and that's in like big bold writing at the top, and it's boxed off, and he's standing looking at it. References to lies, references to renewal, which then goes back to the fire walking, because again, being born again, renewing yourself, being one with the city. And again, he's standing in the middle, that he's the centre of the connected tissue. Again, yeah, I sort of written it here, sorry, when I was being a bit more coherent. The reference to the firewalk and synchronicity might be a reference to his oneness with Gotham, or even the idea that people have explored from time to time about if Batman never existed, would the Joker. So, like, if you know what I'm, you know what I'm getting at with that. Like, if Batman hadn't been Batman, would the Riddler feel the need to be the Riddler, or would he just been a normal criminal? And again, I guess that extrapolates into the real world, into modern day, specifically with American gun laws. The idea being that, like, in Britain, police don't have guns. Criminals, for the most part, don't have guns. In America, the police have guns. Criminals, for the most part, all have guns. And the idea of sort of one-upmanship and one feeding off the other. Yeah, I just thought it was sort of interesting. Like I say, a complete non sequitur. But it just, when I was sitting watching it this morning before I started work, that just really jumped out to me. And this movie absolutely loves a bit of symbolism. I'm assuming you saw it at the end as well with the flood, which was just completely obviously just went full Jesus, with Batman literally sacrificing himself when he's cutting that rope to apparently die and save everyone. And of course, when he hits the water, he rises again, which again, like coming out of water, like Shawshank Redemption does it all the time. Yeah. Just it's like a rebirth metaphor, baptized and cleansed of sin, then paps a flare and gets back to saving people and literally becomes a light in the darkness, and then starts leading them off to safety, leading them off like literally went full Bible at the end there. But
did,
I don't know, I admire the hustle of the symbolism and quite enjoyed it when I started to notice it, because I started to look for it.
Yeah, evidently more than I was probably just too engrossed by just how beautiful this movie is, like the cinematography and the color palette.
That
and
elevator scene when he comes out the elevator and it's dark, and then the guns start going off.
The upside down bit after the car chase with Penguin, where you see him, like the camera sort of flips upside down, and he's walking through the fire, and just like the sort of the hazy yellows and oranges of all that, the sunsets when he's high up in buildings with Catwoman. Hell of, and like the club that he goes into. I just think there's so many beautiful parts of this film to look at. It's like such a well shot, well constructed Batman movie. Like it's like, we've, considering we've played Arkham Asylum as well, which is a very Xbox 360 brown and green and gray game, like looking at the way that this doesn't have a massive array of color to it, but it's, when it does have these colors, it's always like really piercing and striking. And like, you can look at the deep, like on the video version, David's got is that the Blu-ray you got there?
I've got the Blu-ray, yeah.
He's got the Blu-ray,
which is half the version you watched.
Yeah, yeah. If you get the 4K UHD out there, PSA everybody, the 4K one is on the very left bit, and then there's like a DVD sort of flap, a plastic flap, and when you open the thing, the flap will probably default to showing you just the Blu-ray and DVD and bonus features discs. I put the Blu-ray in by accident for half of the movie because I didn't realize there was a third disc, because why would I ever want a Blu-ray in a 4K box? I don't need it. I've clearly already upgraded. Why would I want the lesser version? Stupid. But that's my fault for not checking it properly.
I'm doing it right now while we're on recording. I'm buying, that's going to be my first 4K movie. I'm going to buy the Batman and then watch it.
Anyway, what I was getting at was, if you look at the front of the box, you've got Batman, dark sort of shadowy figure,
yeah,
yellow background, yellowy orange sort of sunset background, big red letters. That is like the color scheme of this film, and they do a lot of beautiful things within that color scheme. And I just, this has got to be probably the best looking Batman film that's ever been made.
I'm probably right. What do you think about, because I detected in recent years a sort of thawing, like the Dark Knight trilogy, I remember people absolutely lost their fucking mind over. And then in recent years, it seems to have become the in vogue thing to do to say retrospectively they're not that good. What do you think of them?
That's silly, isn't it? That is just silly.
Yeah.
I do agree that potentially the most recent one is the weakest of the three in The Dark Knight Rises. Mm-hmm. Still a good film, but just wasn't up to the lofty standards of Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, both of which I still think are excellent films. The Dark Knight is still in my, you know, one of my top 10 films ever. So yeah, I don't agree with that. I think there's definitely been a cooling on Batman because he's suddenly stopped being in amazing films.
DC also were completely incapable of sort of capturing that Marvel
Which was dumb. And since they stopped, well, they obviously are still trying to do that, because I'm pretty sure an Aquaman film came out again, like, in the last year. But in trying to, like, just separate its key IP away from that DCU and having things like Joker and the Batman, giving them just their own, not standalone, because this is a trilogy, but you know what I mean? Yeah. Having their own separate entities that are in other parts of media or in different areas to the DCU, just... That is what should have been happening all along. Batman shouldn't have to be thrown into typical superhero bullshit because, well, everyone's called on the MCU at this point anyway. So to carry on trying to force the DCU that wasn't working anyway in an environment where people are kind of getting tired and sick of these things, this was the right way to go for Batman. It was the right way to pivot because they've had two stellar outcomes from this darker, more like crime saga. Rather, it's more like a murder mystery film, it's almost a horror. Like, if you look at the Batman Part 2 on Google, it's described as action/horror. So they have tried to go further down this psychological crime route than they did with the more sort of grandiose scene-chewing villain pieces that they were doing with Christopher Nolan and certainly doing with the DCU and MCU. So I much prefer this style of Batman story. A lot of this story in here, like, Batman investigating actual grisly murders that are, we keep saying grounded, but they are less theatrical type of murder. Like, you know, even in The Dark Knight, the Joker was doing crazy shit to people, you know, slamming a guy's head into a pencil and all that kind of stuff. And the hospital scene where he's dressed up like a nurse, Bane sort of blowing up a football stadium for the lols. Whereas in this one, you've got the Riddler, typically a character, again, as we're going to come to later, in the Arkham games, who is just sort of kooky and, oh, you're never going to find all my trophies. And in Dark Knight, he's like making you do races through fucking stunt courses. In this one, he's just like basically an incel that fucking hammers the shit out of people with like carpet.
Doofers.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. That'll do. You know, he's doing like really horribly intimate one-on-one sort of serial killer shit, and that kind of Batman story is not told enough in anything but the darkest of his comics, like things like The Long Halloween, stuff like that, where Batman actually has to become a detective investigating grisly murders is the coolest kind of Batman for me, rather than, you know, the silly Adam West shit or whatever.
Yeah, I'm fully on board with that. I like that it's the one superhero for me that can and sort of does investigate that sort of more serious side. I mean, I'm fully aware of what I'm about to spout here as an opinion. This is not the de facto thing, but I do think it's interesting that sort of DC, to me, like, in my mind, the most iconic superhero is Batman. He is the one that just on his own is just sort of sits above everyone else. But then as a sort of body of work, Marvel seemed to have more okay ones. I mean, the exception to that being,
I agree,
Spider-Man's probably would be a standout big blockbuster superhero, but like everyone else, I mean, Iron Man was a big breakout in the MCU, but really he was not much, was he, before those movies came along. But then I don't know, I just think the DC catalog outside of Batman and the sort of main pillar villains in the Batman universe is just so much weaker than everything else they've got. Like,
yeah, I agree.
Superman, I think, is rubbish.
I can't stand Superman. Yeah,
like Wonder Woman has just never grabbed me in any way. Who else has DC got?
The Flash.
The Flash. Aquaman. He just runs fast. He just swims good. Like,
yeah, basically.
I just like how grounded it is. Grounded is the wrong word because it is not, a bit like how
he is still dressed like a bat, but we know what you mean.
There's no superpowers. He's not zapping people with his eyes. He's not bending pipes with his fingers. I don't know. He just feels like a human being that's just exceptional.
Yeah, he had a good butler.
But I think, yeah, overall, this is an excellent movie, and it's set up well to see more. And given how good a job they did with the Riddler, I'm looking forward to seeing more. So is this Joker, should I go now and look out this Joker movie?
Oh, with Joaquin Phoenix? Yes, definitely.
And is it set in this universe, is it?
I'm not sure.
Or is it its own standalone thing?
Yeah.
Because it sort of, I just assumed that like when all this came out, the DC were starting their own MCU, and they did do that for a while, but then the Batman stuff sort of sputtered. And then it wasn't clear whether it was its own thing, whether it's tied up in other stuff. In a way, I'm quite happy for it being its own thing. I'm much more of a fan of the Batman. You know, if you're going to get a Batman graphic novel, it starts and finishes its own story, and then you can just sort of forget the rest. I like that much better than having to have 300 issues wrapped up in my brain before I come to it. I've periodically in my life, while you're looking it up, I've tried to get into like the Batman comics. A couple of times tried like the New 52, and like the Court of Owls is meant to be quite good.
I really like that story.
I always get like, is it like a third, two thirds in, and then they start whipping out like he's got like a 10-year-old son who's also a superhero, and that's as soon as that starts, I just can't don't like the idea. Could you imagine when Cassie's 9 just letting her stick on a costume and go out and beat up bad guys that try to stab her?
Yeah, just, you know, I'm a vigilante, so. Well, that's basically the thing from fucking Kick-Ass, isn't it? That's the whole thing there. With, what's that? Is it Hit Girl?
Hit Girl, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, and her Batman dad, played by Nicolas Cage. I can't remember what his name was.
What a great movie that is.
It's brilliant. So, yes, they are not in the same universe. The Joker is set in 1981, I think, and we've already seen Joker in this that is not Joaquin Phoenix anyway, so Matt Reeves has already dismissed that, so they're not the same. But
it's still a good movie.
But Joker's a great movie, yeah. It's doesn't have Batman in it at all from what I can remember.
It's only £7 on Blu-ray, me as well.
Yeah, I really liked that. I've only seen that in the cinema. I haven't watched it since, but it was the start of this great trend for Batman of a new style of film, because the Dark Knight trilogy did kind of already touch on this, but it's taking it that one step further, I think, even more mature than the other two.
And kudos to you, sir, because I think when we had spoken about this, my suggestion was we've obviously got to go the Dark Knight route, but I'm glad we didn't now. I'm glad we had a look at that one and I watched that one again, and it's made me now excited for that. I don't know how excited I would have been had it come along and I hadn't rewatched a movie and discussed it with you, so
yeah.
Glad we ended up watching that.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad. Because it's been out on DVD and things to buy for a while now. So, and I just hadn't even thought about getting it and watching it again. I don't know why, but I'm really good. This is like really reignited my Batman love. You're talking about graphic novels. I've got so many graphic novels that I still haven't read yet. Then you know that there's another. They did another like third part of the from the Dark Knight Rises. They did a third one of those like about a year or two ago.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, the middle one is okay. Did I say Dark Knight Rises? It's Dark Knight Returns, isn't it?
Yeah, because I was watching this and I was like, and playing the game, obviously, and about 6 months to a year ago, I went and sold all my graphic novels and I was like, I wish I still had my Batman ones.
I've been trying to sell my Walking Dead ones and no one's biting.
I think I've sold like 2/3 of my Walking Dead ones. I've got a couple just sitting on there.
I tried to sell them as a job lot. Maybe that's why nothing's happened.
Maybe. I think I sold them all individually, £5 each. They all sort of dripped away.
Yeah, maybe I should try doing that. Yeah, it's called Batman, the Dark Knight Master Race. And although I said that's recently, that was 2017, which is upsetting. It's quite funny that but Dark Knight Returns, Dark Knight Strikes Again, and Dark Knight Master Race, they've gone from 1986 to 2001 to 2017. So they are few and far between when those bad boys come out.
Yeah. And it's what is that linked to? It's not its own thing.
No, it is its own thing, yeah. Yeah, that's just the Frank Miller stuff. They're all sort of standalone stories.
Year one is, I think, the one I used to have.
Yeah, year one is great. Like I said, Long Halloween's really good. I've got so many downstairs.
Take a picture after this podcast Take a picture of it, and I'm going to buy a selection.
I will. I'll take a picture, and I will. I'll let you know the.
Oh, there's a Blu-ray Long Halloween.
I bought that the other day because I got £10 credit from using the browser extension Honey, which very rarely gives me the discount codes it purports to.
It's meant to do.
Has a reward service that gave me a £10 Amazon voucher, so I spent it on the Long Halloween Blu-ray, which is sort of for those watching, like right there. I've got loads of the animated ones as well, actually, on Blu-ray that I don't think I've watched yet. I've got the Man Who Laughs, which is a fucking great graphic novel, actually. I've got Year One. I've got that Gotham by Gaslight. I've got The Dark Knight Returns Part 1 and 2.
Oh, I've read Gotham by Gaslight.
Have you?
I used to have that, yeah, but I don't really remember anything. That's the one that's like Victorian era Gotham.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Batman. Yeah, I like that, but I don't remember. Now I don't remember anything about it.
Have you read, considering we're about to start talking about Arkham Asylum, have you read Arkham Asylum, the graphic novel?
No, okay. No. So that was one thing I was going to ask you about because I started Googling it and saw that who had made, I was like, is the Arkham Asylum story its own thing or is it lifted from something?
The Arkham Asylum story for the game, I believe, is not lifted from anything. It's written by Paul Dini, isn't it, who did the animated series.
Right, okay. Because I had written that down, and I've got a link to a Wikipedia page. I was like, oh, that might be worth a mention, but I don't know anything about him, but I assumed you would.
What else has he written? Wrote the Arkham City graphic novel that accompanied the second game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's not done any graphic novels that would probably like massively jump out at you as being the famous ones. But he is most famous for the animated series.
Okay, got you.
Which is great and was quite dark for a children's series or, you know, aimed at children. I remember watching it at the time when I was a much younger kid and being slightly like, not underwhelmed, but disappointed that it wasn't full of action and whatever, because it was a lot more, again, grounded for wanting to not keep using that word. But I didn't expect that like a Arkham Asylum style story was doable by this guy who wrote, you know, initially just mainly wrote a children's cartoon.
Yeah. Given that we've been speaking a lot about the sort of atmosphere and the setting of the movie, what do you think about the world building, atmosphere, setting, tone of the game, Batman Arkham Asylum?
Did seem to like lean more towards the tone and style of the Nolan movies, which would be expected at the time. I think a lot of people were probably thinking it was actually linked to those films in some way, but obviously it's not. The tone of the first game is, I think it strikes the balance quite nicely. You know, Joker is obnoxious. He is kooky and weird. Yep. He's doing silly things and being silly over the
Mark Hamill, PAs. Right? Isn't it?
Yes. Who I think a lot of people would say is the greatest Joker of all time. He just naturally fit into that role. Again, he was the Joker from all the animated shows and probably why he was brought back in for this one as well, with the writing staff being what it was. So I think it had that nice mix of that, but it also was, a very deep down sort of serious story with a lot of people getting killed. You know, the most, I suppose, the biggest example of that is when, I forget what her name is now, Dr. Grant, is it? The woman who's sort of been helping to make the venom stuff.
Yeah.
She just gets blown up in the face and dies, which I'd forgotten that actually happened to her. So, yeah, I really like the way that they struck a balance between the more sort of supernatural, silly elements of Batman, but they kept it all grounded with this like other, darker, well, both visually and from a narrative standpoint, story that involves a lot of people dying and being kidnapped, and obviously all the psychological tricks that it plays on you with Scarecrow and Joker.
Yeah, I think I'd largely agree with that. Because when I was playing through it and thinking about it, even down to like the sort of set design, it sort of swings between being the super serious Batman of like the Nolan era and also sort of giving several nods back to the, I don't want to call it the more hokey era, but the more cartoony, how would you describe it? Sort of like disbelieving, like superhero stuff with like Killer Croc and things like that. And it sort of does a good job of, I think, largely of straddling the line and sort of grounding in this more serious Batman universe that was popular both today and when that game came out, but also doing the nods back to the other stuff that Batman has done over the years. I found that a lot of the stuff when you would leave the asylum, you just had to accept that you're playing a video game to me, and that you just sort of go along with it. Like this entire sort of subsection of the asylum with like ruined buildings underneath the overarching building, like at some point did become a bit much for me, because like it's so run down and crumbling that you can't use your batarang hook to like scale it like you can outside. However, it's strong enough to hold up the entire foundations of what is like a city on an island.
That's weird.
And like the Killer Croc section, fun from a gameplay section, like I think I text you about it, and like I think they mention it, and they've essentially got a custom built sewer that he just swims about in, and it's massive. Why does he get so much space, and then Poison Ivy's kept in this little box with her pants on?
I assume, I guess you're supposed to infer from that nobody wants to go anywhere near him. Because they do say something at some point, don't they? That they just keep him locked down in the sewers and just throw meat to him every now and again.
Yeah.
Kind of like Bart's evil twin in that Treehouse of Horror thing. But
I wonder where he was going then at the start.
Is that when they... Are they bringing him in?
When you see him at the start, he comes up an elevator and goes, I'm going to eat you, Batman, and then just wanders off. And he's not being escorted by anyone. He's just... got a collar on.
Yeah. Just will shock him if he starts running away, I guess. And he'll fall in the water like he does over and over again.
Yeah. There's other stuff like when you're walking around and you start like crawling about and things like that, there's just like back to the old video gaminess, and it's like, oh, we're using the Unreal Engine. We need some atmospheric JPEG-ery. Let's just stick a big cog up. And it was just like these massive cogs. Wasn't clear what they were doing, but they were just there, and it's like, oh, I'm in a science area, of course they've got cogs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just stuff like
Gothic
that.
Gothic science.
Exactly. but for the most part, I enjoyed it. Really atmospheric.
Yes.
Pretty well done.
Yeah. Very obvious reason why the Christopher Nolan Batman movies stuck to the least fantastical rogues gallery members. So you've got people like Joker, you've got Penguin. Was Penguin in it? No, he wasn't, was he?
No.
Bane. Okay, you've got Bane.
He was just a muscly guy though. He wasn't pumped up full of drugs, was he?
Yeah, you've got Talia, Al Ghul again. Not a superhero. Supervillain really. But once you start to go too far out of that realm of people,
they'd get a bit mad, some of them.
You have to go into the crazier shit, so that when you've got Arkham Asylum with, like, Poison Ivy in it.
Harley Quinn. We never mentioned her either.
Yeah, of
she's
course.
She's another one.
Yeah, she's just somebody who just falls in love with Joker and just goes nuts.
Yeah.
And once you start bringing in, like, the Killer Crocs, there's a very, very brief element of the Ventriloquist in this as well, in the game as well. Who else do we have in?
Even Scarecrow's a bit daft, but Scarecrow, they managed to find a way to fairly ground him, I think. Both in the movie and in the game.
Yeah, you're right, yeah. So I think, sometimes this game did have to like get a little bit wacky because the choice of villains ran out when you're trying to keep it, you're trying to keep realism in your remit. So yeah, it did that well.
I actually went and looked up a list of Batman villains over the years. Let me see if I can find it for you and we can see which ones you've heard of.
I mean, a lot of them. You know, if I hadn't heard of them, they were described in this game after I found a riddle and it had a little character bio for me to read.
Oh, did you? Okay, so yeah, I took to Google with this and searched weird Batman villains, and this is what I came up with. So we've got kicking things off with Condiment King.
What?
Can you guess what his gimmick was?
I really hope he just killed people with like violent acidic ketchup and mustard.
You're not far away. Condiment King's weirdness is pretty self-explanatory. He's a guy whose gimmick is splatting people with highly pressurized ketchup and mustard.
Wonderful.
He just goes around. Yeah, he's dressed. He's got a cape on. He just goes around splatting people. Next one, we've got Dr. Double X. Have you heard of him?
Nope.
So Dr. Double X is first appeared in 1958's Detective Comics, number 261. written by Dave Wood and Sheldon Molodoff, if that makes sense to anyone. A character who seems to be a bit of a hero, Dr. Simon X. He's a scientist who develops a device that can turn a person's spiritual aura into a physical being that exists alongside them as a duplicate.
Hence the two X's.
Yeah. Turning it on himself, he creates a doppelganger of himself that becomes a superpowered villain with the ability to manipulate energy.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. X, oh my god, I just realised what you said there. I didn't pick that up. ECKS, it's written down, and I've been reading it, not picking it up.
Oh, right, I didn't realise that either, because I thought you said Dr.
Like
X.
As in Alex Eck.
Oh, yeah, big
Eck.
You're
Scottish. Yeah. Oh my god. I just realised that's what they did. Okay, next up we've got the Ten-Eyed Man, who happens to be blind. It's got the front of a comic, and Batman's got a thinking bubble, but we're both blind. How can he see me? How?
Was it the Ten-Eyed Man?
Yeah, Philip Reardon, yeah. He was a US Army soldier who was caught in a fight between Batman and some terrorists, which culminated in an explosion that damaged his eyes.
I do love as well, back when like comics felt like they had to give some propaganda to the populace, yeah, and the children in there by like, he's fighting terrorists, yeah, now, or Superman's in World War II. Yeah.
Yeah. He undergoes experimental procedure in which his optic nerves are reattached to his fingertips.
Oh, sweet. 10 eyes.
Why did he do that?
It's like an extreme version of that thing from Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah. Check this out, though. Becoming the so-called Ten-Eyed Man, Reardon trains with monks who teach him to use his bizarre finger sight as an advantage in martial arts, swearing vengeance on Batman, who he blames for his condition. But none of that can save him from being defeated by Batman, who forces him to catch a prickly bush with his bare eye hands.
Ooh, have some of that. Speaking of prickly bush, that's an extremely challenging wank. That would put you straight celibate on the self-loving scenario if you had to get up close and stare at your own sack all the time.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not having any
terrible.
Of that. No.
Just have to wear gloves, I guess.
Yeah,
close your eyes.
Use your feet.
Use your feet, gloves, you can learn. Yeah.
Close your eye. How do you do that? There you go. Just bend your fingertips a little bit. I've closed my eyes now.
I'm going to keep going because this is quite good.
It is great.
We've got the Penny Plunderer.
I'm so annoyed I don't know any of these. But then they're all from like the 50s, aren't they?
Yeah. This one's from 1947.
Penny Plunderer.
There's a lot of Batman villains who are obsessed with one eccentric gimmick or concept, but few have as strange a history as the nominally determinative rapscallion Joe Coyne, a.k.a. Penny Plunderer, who had just one canonical appearance in 1947.
It was a big hit then.
Yeah. The story involved him setting a special trap with a giant penny that has since become a staple of Batman's Batcave.
Oh.
So apparently it's in Batman's Batcave. So basically, this
guy. A big penny
guy
in there somewhere that he's never given back. He basically bankrupted this guy in one fell swoop and kept it in his Batcave.
Oh my god. Aside from the weirdness of this penny gimmick, what really sets Penny Plunderer apart from so many other similar hokey Batman villains is that he was sentenced to death in the electric chair and executed. This makes him one of the few Batman villains who paid the ultimate price for his crimes at the hands of the state, all for a few pennies.
People say Batman doesn't kill.
He doesn't, no. He just gets the state to do it.
Yeah.
Next up, we've got the Outsider, who looks...
Kevin Nash, isn't it?
Spot him, but yeah, just Kevin Nash.
Yeah, so good. Oh no, he only fights the Punisher. Sorry,
what is it? Kevin Nash finisher, just like a last ride sort of thing.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to see him give that to Batman.
Yeah, well, I mean, Bane loves a backbreaker, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah. Since apparently he's from the Silver Age, this Outsider lad. If that means anything to you, but his strangest story is the original told. Yeah, blah 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 blah. Blah, 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 in which Batman's faithful butler Alfred Pennyworth dies and is resurrected as a bizarre villain known as the Outsider. After his death being crushed by a boulder while saving the lives of Batman and Robin, Alfred's body is confiscated by a mad scientist named Brandon Crawford Crawford succeeds in reviving Alfred, but his body is changed into a strange mutated form that he develops, and he develops telekinetic powers. Because, of course he does. Weirdest of all, Alfred is later restored to his original self, though he remains cursed to occasionally become the outsider for many years afterwards.
Bloody hell.
Good lord. We've got Zebra Man, who is utterly fantastic. I'm going to have to send you a picture of Zebra Man.
Yeah, you are.
He comes zebraing his way over to you.
Oh, that's not at all what I expected he was going to look like. He looks like a really shit Lucha Libre.
He does, yeah. Picture a villain named the Zebra Man. If you imagine a guy covered head to toe in zebra stripes, you're dead on. Now try to imagine his powers. If you're guessing he's got some kind of animal strength and speed or some kind of camouflage powers, you're dead ass wrong. In fact, Zebra Man, who debuted in 1960s Detective Comics by Batman co-creator Bill Finger, has the power of diamagnetism, which basically means he has magneto-like control over anything that isn't magnetic, you know, like a zebra.
Mm-hmm. Anything that's not magnetic.
Yes.
So he's like, yeah, he's like the opposite of Magneto.
Yes, an anti-Magneto.
Interesting.
He can make wood fly about.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's terrible. That's some real shit.
We've got more. This goes on. My favourite is not this one coming up. It's the one after that.
Okay.
So we'll make it at least there. Polka Dot Man we've got next.
Okay, Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah. Let's see what he's done. He's in the Suicide... Oh, he's in the Suicide Squad. I forgot about that. Polka Dot Man.
I mean, the Suicide Squad is largely shit as well, isn't it? All the people in there are pretty lame.
First appear, Blob. Unlike the movie version of Polka Dot Man, whose body is infused with strange cosmic polka dot energy, the original version of Abner Krill had the power to pull multicolored polka dots off his suit and turn them into a variety of gadgets.
Andy.
So in the picture here I've got, he's pulled an orange polka dot off of his suit and he's thrown what was like a fireball at Batman and Robin.
Oh, it's because that's the same colour.
Next up we've got all-timer, the crazy quilt.
The Towley from South Park.
Yeah, pretty much. He's just got like a Joseph Technicolor Dreamcoat suit on and some hat with lights on the top. Aside from having a name taken from a quilting style, which includes a term that wouldn't necessarily fly these days, Crazy Quilt's weirdness goes much deeper than that than what's on the surface, sorry. And what's on the surface is already completely outrageous. Created by legendary cartoonist Jack Kirby in 1946's Boy Commandos issue, Crazy Quilt is the criminal alter ego of patchwork-obsessed artist named Quilt, whose real name was later revealed to be Paul Decker. After deciding to become a villain, he first makes himself an enemy to a bunch of scrappy little stinkers known as the Boy Commandos, before embarking on a lifelong
Gotham
crime spree. Yeah, in Gotham City that would soon attract the Caped Crusader himself. He's just a naughty boy. I'll read out some more, and if you want me to hear about them, we can stop. Okay. Next, we've got Colonel Blimp.
I hope he's fat.
Unfortunately not. He just seems to ride around in a blimp. Mr. Camera, who has the head of a camera, by the looks of him.
Okay.
And that's us out. We almost made it to the end.
Mr. Camera. Colonel Blimp. Fucking hell.
Interestingly, reference to Batman Arkham Asylum.
Yeah, so cool kids just shorted it to Barkham.
Barkham didn't even make it into the weird list. Was Calendar Man, who is referenced a couple of times. He's also referenced in Arkham Origins as well, I noticed.
He's in Arkham City, isn't he? Isn't he the one where if you could change you went offline and changed your Xbox 360 or PS3 clock to like Christmas Day, it would like say something about Christmas to you and all this kind of shit.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, Calendar Man's fucking stupid. Mad Hatter is also stupid. I mean, that's already a character. Yeah, what are you going to do? Invite me to tea? Oh, he does invite you to tea. Okay. Right.
Does he invite you to tea?
But tea of death.
Yeah, it's literally, that's actually up to where I played in that game. You come out of, is it the Joker's lair, which is just a wrecked boat in Origins? And yeah, the Mad Hatter's henchmen are just dancing and singing a song to you and then they die.
Oh yeah, of course. Because they drank that tea.
They did. They did drink the tea.
Probably just way too strong or something. Not allowed any sugar in it. So evil.
It's funny how dirtily obvious that this is an Unreal Engine game. Like, it's like just watching Gears characters walking around the screen.
I said that to you, didn't I? I said Batman. I hate Batman's character model in this game. But
massive forearms.
He just looks like he's in a cog. He really looks cog as fuck. And he's the jump up. I mean, I can't remember what they look like in Arkham City. I feel like if the Batman Part 2 ever comes out, we'll have to play Arkham City in the year that we can, you know, to mix them together again. Yeah, the character models in this game are probably the worst thing about it, I would say. Apart from Joker's pretty good, but Batman looks terrible in this
game. Do you know who I really didn't like was Jim Gordon, because he's so muscly.
He's
an absolute unit.
Hench. Yeah, there's no need for that.
Yeah, and it just doesn't really fit. Like, the state of Jim Gordon, he actually didn't need Batman, because he just crushed the Joker with his little pinky.
Yeah, you just got a fucking gammon at the head of your police. Like, you don't need... Yeah, you don't need the Caped Crusader when you've got, you know, Arnie. That joke's not funny. Let's move on.
There is a reference after the Harley Quinn boss fight to old Arnold Schwarzenegger, who appears in Arkham City, isn't there?
There is.
Mr. Freeze.
Mm-hmm. Yes, with just, you know, a bit of ice on the wall. You take a picture of it and off you go. I forgot about
that. What did you think of the gameplay in this game? This is probably the biggest part of this game, isn't it, I guess?
Yeah. Well, as I said very early on the show, I look at this game as like a pure Metroidvania. And in terms of that genre, it's well up there with the best ones.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. Who would have known on the journey I've been with Metroidvanias over the last couple of years with this podcast? I actually already played one and loved it.
Yeah.
Many years ago, I just didn't click.
Yeah. I think there's very little to fault about the gameplay of this. The controls, going back to them, takes a bit of getting used to. And I think, luckily, we, as an industry, gaming has largely moved on from having a face button be your sprint so that you can't use the analog stick to control the camera at the same time. Mm-hmm. Don't take my thumb away from the sticks when I'm trying to be, you know, mobile. That's just not going to happen. So that's a bit odd that you have to press A to sprint.
Do you think that leans into, because one of the notes here I've got is the gameplay is generally fine, but if I'm being totally honest in just trying to pick holes in the game, I do think Batman's movement does feel quite stiff. Mm-hmm. Is that by design, or do you think that's perhaps the controls?
Potentially it could be. As we've said, he's a chunky dude. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, you need only look at every poor bastard who's tried to play him in a movie and how rigid they appear to look in that damn suit. So, you know, it's not unlikely that he would be quite a stiff mover.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just the running animation just looks kind of a little bit like overly army, doesn't it? He's just kind of like, his arms powerful as he runs. He's really overdoing that stride. Potentially, yeah, the stiffness of it, because it's quite old now, I guess, as well. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's part of why it feels the way that it does. I mean, if you play the original Gears, they're quite stiff to move, really. They do.
Yeah,
they
that's
do
true.
A good forward roll.
Trying to change, like doing a roadie run and trying to run in a circle is a feat in itself in the Gears games.
Exactly.
So you try to turn a tanker.
Yeah, they get out of that in this by having you know, you've got your grappling hook to zip around to higher up ledges, and you've got your cape that you can occasionally use. Mm-hmm. And the stiffness does help at times when you're trying to, you know, you have to do things with some sort of precision, like, you know, putting down the explosive gel and stuff. He's not like floaty or, you know, whatever to make that difficult. It's very precise.
It's quite clicky in that regard.
Yeah.
In that, like, you pull the left trigger and it locks onto where it needs to be. You press RB and it automatically hooks onto where you need to be. Even the fighting, as fun as it is, your Y, X, B against whatever enemy you're up against, that works. It's like that rock, paper, scissors combat that still exists to this day. I mean, Spider-Man uses it, doesn't it?
Yeah, this inspired combat like that for decades.
Do you think that's its most lasting legacy, is how, at the time, how groundbreaking that combat was?
Yeah, definitely.
And was it the first game to do it? I was trying to think. I assumed it was, but I couldn't say for sure. Certainly popularized it.
Yeah, I think it probably was. Certainly that, in terms of like having an indicator above an enemy's head that showed you when you needed to counter somebody by pressing one button, and having that in like a flow of combat. I don't think anything did that before this. You had parrying and you had blocking and things like that, and you probably had counterattacks, but the combat sort of sticks, if that makes sense. He's almost got like a magnetic force, like an auto aim, hasn't he? Like, as we said, he's got a stiffness to his general mobility, but when he's in these fights, one flick of the stick and the tap of the X button, and he will just do whatever he needs. He will do a fucking cartwheel or a, you know, front flip to fly over to the guy across the room, and he will punch that motherfucker when he gets there. He will make that jump every time. So it's almost like it almost literally snaps Batman to whoever it is that you're aiming at, and it's so fluid, and it just works so nicely every time. And then when it flows, you just feel so overpowered.
When you get into like a zen state, and like a fight goes really well, you kill like a whole load of enemies and like really rack up that combo meter, you feel like an absolute badass.
Yeah, totally.
In a way that it's still effective today.
Yes. If anything, I was the one of the biggest disappointments about Arkham Asylum is just that when you see two blokes by themselves and you just go and beat the fuck out of them, you're like, oh, come on. Yeah. I can take on 30 blokes at once. Now I'm really ready for like a massive scrap. Why even you got two lads having a chat? It's I want more. I want them to overwhelm me as much as possible so I can show them how good I am. Because I think Arkham City full on went like big time groups of dudes all the time to try and let you sort of freely express all the additional stuff they added to the combat on top of an already excellent engine. But as you said, so many games copied this, like Spider-Man does both of these. It has the stealth parts and the fucking combat in it. You've got that Mad Max game did it. The fucking Lord of the Rings ones that Warner Brothers did.
Shit, yeah.
They ripped that off as well. That's, it's such a great system. Like, it almost feels detached from the rest of the game, as I was just trying to say a minute ago. Like, everything else has a certain feel to it, but the combat feels like vastly different to every other part of moving Batman around. It's so different and floaty and yet snappy at the same time. It's just awesome. Really satisfying.
I would agree with that. How do you feel like in terms of like that? Because that was really good fun. Did they rely on it too much insofar as, like, I think even for the most part, the boss fights are largely just, oh, this fighting mechanic's good, let's throw more enemies at you. So, like, I was looking through the boss lists to make sure that we covered them all or if we didn't miss anything. And it's, like, listing things like the Harley Quinn boss fight. Mm-hmm. And that is just another large enemy, bunch of enemies, except you've got to get off the electric floor every so often. Yeah. And then, like, towards the later half of the game, there's all those enemies that come down the lift, which is just an amped-up version of the Bane fight that you fight earlier on in the game, which, again, is just the same thing, but with Big Man, to sort of cat amongst the pigeons. It's not very inventive with its boss fights, and I think it's the really subsequent games becomes more so.
Absolutely. They got better every time. Well, Arkham Knight had a couple of shitty ones where you're just having a tank fight, but Arkham City and Arkham Origins.
Mr. Freeze one's the one that sticks out to me, where it basically forces you to engage in the entire gamut of the mechanics.
Because he'll shut down what you're doing. That sort of dynamically makes you change what style you're going to do for your next approach. But you're right. There was a thing going around on Twitter today, where people were like putting pictures of four games and saying, "Here, these are my four games that are 10 out of 10s. I had a go at it. And because this is obviously the most recent game I've completed, I thought, oh, Batman Arkham Asylum, like I said earlier on, low key, like masterpiece of a game. Is it a 10 out of 10? And then I thought about the boss fights and thought, no, they make it a 9 because
Poison Ivy boss fight's poor, I think.
That feels like the first boss fight you do in a Zelda game, like the one in Wind Waker.
That's a great
show. You've got to throw your boomerang at that fucking big fiery thing in the first the Dragon Roost Island on Wind Waker. That's what this was, just worse, because it also had a gank squad, because every boss in this game has to have a fucking, it's Dark Souls 2 again, just gank squads for boss fights, and maybe a fat lad that you're supposed to concentrate on, but just ad nauseum, even when it's Joker at the end. Like, what a letdown.
The Joker boss fight is awful. It is truly awful.
Doesn't even fight you, really. It's just, here's some more lads. I feel like, you remember, apparently it's been somewhat fixed at this point, but do you remember the furore around Deus Ex Human Revolution, where like you've got this immersive sim stealth classic that's really well done, really beautifully realized and upgraded from the original games, and then the boss fights were outsourced to a different company and they were fucking terrible. Oh, because you were basically having a shootout when you've done
Oh my god, I had totally forgotten that was a thing. Shit.
Like, you can play the first part of Deus Ex with a trank gun, and then you've got a boss fight with a guy lobbing grenades at you and you've got a trank gun. Like, what the fuck?
Shit, it felt like, I forgot all about that.
Like, obviously the combat here is not that removed from the general the boss fights is not that removed from the general combat, but it really does feel like they had no time to do the boss fights or think about the boss fights at all, so they just gave them to like the fucking work experience lads who just kept copying and pasting the fat bloke in it over and over again.
They're variation. Most of them are variations of the same thing.
Yeah.
With like a little bit of a change.
There's one boss where it's just Zaz, right? And all you do is just go up behind him and press Y. And then you knock him out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
But, they are a real letdown.
We've spoken about it a couple of times over the years, but I think we spoke about it in the RoboCop podcast about how I quite appreciated that. Like, I was expecting towards the end of that game there to be this massive boss. Well, I mean, obviously you end up getting one, but up to that point I was expecting this big boss fight, and then the big bad guy tries to get in, everybody's just like, nah. And then RoboCop just blows his arm off, and it's just like not a thing.
Yeah.
I think Batman would have benefited from that. Like, if you just, when you get to the Joker, if he just goes up and punches him in and then takes him.
Which I think happens in Arkham Origins quite a lot. You have fights with just one-on-one against the Joker, and it usually ends up with Batman just like tenderizing his face like a steak.
Yeah, because the fighting, that's never been the Joker's thing. It's always sort of messing with him.
They try to take this ludicrous step to make the Joker a physical threat to Batman, but then he never actually really fights you. He just swings his arms for a bit and then fucks off and looks at some helicopters.
And then turns his back conveniently.
Yeah. And you pull
just
him down.
Gets distracted by a helicopter. Yeah, like a fucking
gets his
ADHD
fucking
kid.
Fingernails caught in some wood. And then you give him a few punches times three because he's Bowser now. Wow, so shit.
I do like how they sort of turn the environments on the head when they introduce Poison Ivy. And the whole area just gets a sort of redesign. Another thing I didn't notice either until I played it this time round is the bit where you go to see Joker at the end of the game, his henchmen are building that area throughout the course of the game.
Oh yeah.
So when you turn up at the end, there's like a big, like Joker's face with his mouth open, and you walk in the door.
Because where's that? Which one of them's the artist amongst? Which one of them seems notably artistic to you? Like, oi, Colin, you're going to do the big Joker face over the entranceway.
Colin, you're on Joker face.
Yeah, we'll go set up the electrified fucking fence on the inside. We'll see you in a bit. He's like, all right, boys, see you later.
Yeah, like you go out, and at the start of the game, they're just sort of hanging around there, and then you come back a bit later, and they've like half built like the wooden archway without the Joker face on it. And yeah, it steadily gets built as the game goes on. Never noticed
that
before. That
is cool. Yeah, slightly hyperbolic, but I'm going to say it anyway. The moment where you get invited to the Joker's party and there's a guy at the front door who's being a dickhead and be like, oh, I can't find your name on the list. The fact that you're able to just punch that guy in the face and beat him up and all of his mates, and you get an achievement for it, top 10 gaming moments of all time.
Because I just walked by him.
Oh, I just fucking smacked him in the mouth when he was talking his shit. He was like, oh, let me just see. Hey, no, hang on. B. I just punched him, and I thought I'm going to press the punch button because nothing will happen. You know, like you can't foul the keeper in FIFA when he's holding the ball. No, you can just beat the shit out of him. And then you get an achievement if you beat up all the people who are clapping with the party hats on in the next room. Brilliant. I loved that. So good. They're all so cocky and having such a great time. You just come in and fucking everybody's having a great time. Oh, what is it? Everyone's a tough guy till you get punched in the mouth.
The one time the game really just changes entirely, I guess. Like, if we're talking about how the boss fights are just hyped up versions of the main game, the Scarecrow stuff is quite different. Turns 2D for the most part.
It does.
There's a first person section in that area when you first go into when he first starts messing with you.
Yes.
Then there's that bit where I was like, has my game frozen?
Because
it was like,
Sorry, go on.
I thought, yeah, and they said something like, oh, did you see the score for the game today? And then the game just, like, freezes. Mm-hmm. And then it goes black, and I was like, oh, my game's crashed. And then it pops up, and you're in the Joker's position.
Yeah.
At the start of the game.
That is probably one of the best bits of the game. Probably the whole of the series, that whole segment there. If I remember rightly, because it had happened to me before when I originally played this on 360, that what happened in that sequence to start off where it sort of glitches was exactly what it looks like when your Xbox 360 got the red ring of death.
Oh, I love the life out of you.
Yeah, I think they did that on purpose to mimic that. And my favorite part of that was... when the Joker shoots Batman in the head, because again, as David just said, when there's a part where you get strapped into the sort of Hannibal Lecter thing, like Joker was at the beginning of the game, you are now in that position and the Joker is on the outside and he points a gun at Batman and shoots him in the head, and it does the game over death screen, and it gives a tip and it says, press the middle analog stick to avoid Joker's gun.
That's
like, a fucking quality. That's like Fisher mailed Metal Gear Solid stuff. I thought that was absolutely awesome. And you've got to play the Scarecrow sections, and they're a bit wank.
They are a bit wank.
And I remember people saying, oh, Arkham City's great, but it doesn't have anything as, you know, striking in them as the Scarecrow segments. And yes, from a aesthetic and narrative standpoint, the Scarecrow sections were pretty cool, but playing them, terrible. Really,
I totally
not
agree
enjoyable.
With that. I even thought like the enemies that the game eventually starts throwing at you in those areas are just like budget fantasy movie skeletons.
It's like Evil Dead 3.
Like,
yeah.
The fuck? Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally with you in that.
And they're even weaker than the normal guys. And it's just like, it's so easy to fail it. And then you get into the mindset of like, I'm getting fed up now. I want this to end quickly. So you rush
it. If anybody watched my stream, very often I was getting caught over and over again because I was getting caught and I was just trying to sprint.
Yeah.
Because I was just trying to get through it.
You try and think to yourself, like, there must be a way I can get past having to stand around and wait, which nobody likes. Don't make people do that in games. Maybe that's why they took it out, because, it's just waiting for a light to go away and then moving slowly forwards, or a big bloke squishes you. And then you don't even fight him. You just press A on something and it points a light at his chest and he kind of doesn't die, but yeah, whatever.
I fully appreciate the idea, because like I think like you're saying, like the thing I've been complaining about for the most part, like don't get me wrong, we both absolutely love this game, but the sort of niggles we have is that it's perhaps a slight lack of variation, especially when it comes to boss fights.
Yes.
To the point that I think you can argue that you don't need them. This is a break from the norm, and this is an attempt to sort of change the palette a little bit in a way that the game doesn't do at all. It just doesn't do it. It's like, you, I don't know, like say you like tuna mayo, so you eat tuna mayo for a week and you get a bit sick of it. And it's like, well, if you're sick of tuna mayo, well, why don't you eat this shit on a stick? It's like, well, it tastes different, but it's not better.
Yeah, it's because the setup to each part of each gameplay part of those Scarecrow segments allowed them to be so creative. Like, they were really creative in the ways that they started to fuck with you or talk about Batman's psychology or his parents or, you know, the history of that character. And they did it really, really well to sort of get in the head of you as the player by making it look like your stuff's broken and your game's fucked, or get in Batman's head. And then the gameplay was like, as we've just said, it was like the worst kind of 2D platformer where you don't even have control for a lot of it because you're just waiting for something. Worse than an auto-scroller.
Yeah.
So, I remember being like quite looking forward to, like, I remember sort of I must have misremembered or like conflated the memories of the gameplay with the actual setup for it. Being like, oh, I'm really looking forward to those Scarecrow sections again because they were so cool. And then you play them and you're like, oh, these aren't cool in the slightest. These suck.
Yeah. I think I, as we discovered when I was playing this game and we're talking about different bits and pieces, I think I have conflated a lot of this game with the other two in the series, in that, like, again, enjoyed it. It was a great sort of declaration of intent or like tone setter in terms of like the gameplay. But I even think in terms of like the, you know, like my favorite bit of this game in my memory was when it was sticky into the sort of boss fight. It was like an enemy arena where you were in the area and you were creeping on people and you had to like take everyone out one by one. You know what I mean by that? What would you call that? Like a set piece. You could like hang from the top, you could go underground and pull vents and stuff. I remember that being really, really fun. This time round, it was still fun, don't get me wrong, but it was lacked depth that I remember it having.
Agreed.
For the most part, I could just hang around and on the top gargoyles, pick someone off, move, pick someone off, move. And it didn't force me to interact with the environment. It had other stuff, but for the most part, I didn't have to. And I wonder if latter games force you to mix it up a bit.
In the Mr. Freeze fight, they certainly did that. It's just a shame that they didn't do more of that in this, because you're totally right. They have one moment where they put the explosives on the gargoyle so you can't use them. And if you do use them, you need to get off almost immediately. And they try to amp up the way you need to sort of get out of a situation where you've taken somebody out because this collar's going to go off and everyone's going to come to that area. But you're absolutely right where, like, there'll be grates for you to go underground. You can go and you could use your gadgets. It starts talking about, like, oh, you can have, you know, staggered explosions of your whatever the thing was called, like the bats of grenade.
Bat gel.
The bat gel, yeah. To take out targets, and you can try and like taking out walls and knocking them onto people. But as you said, most of the time, I'm going to a gargoyle, I'm pressing the B button, Y button to drag him up there. All of his mates go over there. I'll throw a batarang to knock him down so they all get confused, and then I'll just grab the last one before he runs away and do it over and over again.
Yeah, there's even a bit, and again, like, this is why I'm conflating it. There's a bit in the section where you first, I think it's the bit where you first encounter the exploding gargoyles, or it's the section before that. Where you are in the library sort of area.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're going around the gargoyles, there's these massive fans on top of, like, hanging from the ceiling. And I was like, oh, on the way back, Joker's going to turn those on and they're going to blow me off. I was like, did they blow me off the gargoyles? And it never happened. Have I just invented that entire thing?
Probably.
Or maybe I was remembering the fact that I couldn't use the gargoyles at some point. And I was misremembering the route that they took to do that. But that just never happened.
No. I was trying to see if this game had like a small budget or something, but I can't really find anything that leads me to think that. It probably didn't have as... obviously, it got bigger budgets as it went on and on and on, because you've got Rocksteady.
I mean, it's WB. It's not going to be small, right?
No. Obviously, you've got Rocksteady, though. I don't know how much they had done before that, because Eidos, I think, helped publish it in certainly in the PAL regions anyway. I mean, they were only founded in 2004, so they had made one game, Urban Chaos, that apparently is meant to be okay.
Okay, so that's what I was looking. I was waiting to look up there what they had made.
So whether they weren't trusted with a massive budget at first, it's interesting to see here that they were inspired for the atmosphere and the narrative of the game by BioShock. That's quite interesting. And they have also come out and said recently, you know, that they, well, not recently, but they've come out and said that the influences of the gadgets and stuff was heavily inspired by Metroid and things like Zelda. So it wasn't mad for me to call it a Metroidvania, but I can't see it. It had a team of like 40 people, took just under 2 years to make. So that's quite short. If you think how long games take nowadays, it did expand to 60 people by the end of the game. But they clearly focus on combat the most, because that was their biggest challenge. So perhaps that's why some of these other elements of it were more fleshed out as the game went on, whereas the combat largely stayed the same throughout, other than just adding some more quick fire gadgets to it.
Now, I know you've come up with rules for this, but because I guess technically this isn't a licensed game, is that correct?
It is to me. Some people will say it has to be like a specific tie-in for it to an existing film or TV show to be a licensed game. That's bollocks.
You focus a specific property.
Yeah, this is bollocks. Somebody had to buy the Batman license to make this game, although Warner Brothers own the license.
So kind of where I'm going with that is, within the era that this came out, is this like the first of the good licensed games? Remember, licensed games went through a long old slog of being really, really bad for a while, and then they got good for a while longer. Is this the sort of first of that? I'm trying to think.
Well, probably GoldenEye, I guess.
GoldenEye, yeah, that's true. I was just trying to think of, like, because, like, going from Urban Chaos Riot Response to then getting given the keys to Batman is quite quite a lot of faith they've been given, I guess.
Urban Chaos with a 72 on Metacritic.
What type of game is it?
First person shooter.
See, it's not even... I might watch some videos of that.
It's meant to be like. All right.
The stealth, any opinions on that? I guess we've largely spoken about it. It's fine. It works.
It's
loose enough that if you get spotted, you can get away without it ruining your fun, but you go down fast if you don't move.
I do like that happens quite a bit. Like they make Batman feel vulnerable in a game that's basically all about
making... They got done by the snipers so often.
Oh, the snipers, yeah. I mean, I got shot in a couple of the rooms as well. Probably the mm-hmm. ones where you couldn't use the gargoyles anymore and I'd start thinking a bit more outside of the box. But most of that time was pretty just like running around underground, going into the vents and then coming out and choking somebody out from behind. Stealth in games has never really been something I've cared that much about. I'm not a massive fan of actual stealth games because I'm usually shit at them and then I get frustrated because I can't do them properly. And then when stealth gets like shoehorned into an action game, I feel like it often just breaks the flow of it and makes it like it's just so noticeably less fun.
Fair.
Than the like Uncharted. Nobody prefers the stealth in Uncharted to shooting blokes.
Oh,
just nobody.
No, yeah. Yeah.
So the whatever the predator sections, for want of a, I don't know if that's what they're called in these, but the bits where you're on like you're sneaking around a room and you're going to get shot to shit afterwards, the sort of forced stealth that makes itself distinct enough from usually, you know, the usual just beating up guys, I do respect that they did that mm-hmm. and they did get better as they go along. So I do like the sections, but as you said, maybe they're just a little bit less involved than we remember, probably because we've played better versions of it in the time since.
Yeah, it's the sort of foundation that led to the building blocks that created these better games.
Mm,
and it's
totally,
I guess, important to remember that.
Yeah.
You spoke about liking the Killer Croc fight. Do you want to talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah.
Because that's, again, another bit. That's one boss fight that probably is quite standout.
Yeah. I think I said to you that I found it... I can see that it's quite gimmicky and a bit repetitive. So... not necessarily from the way it plays is it brilliant, but it's more that it just kind of felt like it fit the character nicely to be in that scenario of like he is down in the depths, he's under the water stalking Batman from below. It's probably the biggest shift that the game does towards a more horror focused
style. Certainly does, yeah, that's true.
Especially when, you know, it does the whole, oh, we're going to do the behind, you know, you're running towards the camera thing. You can't quite see where you're going and he's chasing after you. Make too much noise and I think you probably get an insta-death if he comes out and just sort of grabs you. It does obviously interject all these instances of Killer Croc coming out while you're trying to do something else that's quite mundane, which is like walk around and press A on something. So, yeah, you know, I just appreciated that part of it was... different, and it was a boss fight that wasn't just fighting a big bloke and a gank squad beside him, and it felt like it was appropriate enough for what the enemy character is that it made sense for it to play out like that, even if it was a bit repetitive. But
yeah.
I didn't hate it for that because I respected what it was doing otherwise.
Yeah I think I agree with that. I got gypped by it a couple, like maybe once. I had to restart a section because I was like climbing over something as Croc came out of his hidey hole, and it basically didn't let me react and just knocked me clean off my perch.
It did seem to give checkpoints quite regularly throughout that section once you've got a pod, so it doesn't like make
you
do all of them again. And as I had to actually ask you what I was doing in that part, because I thought from the beginning...
Because you had outthought Batman.
Yeah, I thought from the beginning you had to just lure Croc into the bit with the bat gel on it and explode him and trap him immediately, but no, you have to go get all the pods and deal with the psychological horror part before you're allowed to actually get rid of him. So I was just running away from him the whole time, like trying to make him come out after me and then leg it back, and he'd always just dive into the water. And I was thinking like, what am I doing wrong, or what's this stupid number in the corner that keeps going down when I move away? And then I realized the actual objective was to get the pheromones, and I'd forgotten all about that.
I don't know, but I assume, you must get them in England, I just don't know what they're called, but in Scotland, certainly in Aberdeenshire, it's called a swoopy. So when I was a lifeguard at uni, on a Friday night and Saturday afternoon, there would be this inflatable assault course that they'd put into the swimming pool.
Okay.
The kids would like line up and run the swoopy.
It's kind of like that, what's that TV show that fucking Richard Hammond
Wipeout? Is it Wipeout?
Yeah. Something like that, Ultimate Wipeout, some bollocks. Yeah, basically like
something
that.
Like that. It's a similar idea, yeah.
Swoopy, I like that name.
I would love to know if Killer Croc was, what do you call it, like mo-capped for that section, because the way he falls off of the wooden planks after you give him a batarang in the face is like spot on. It's part, the animation is like, it's the best animation in that game, hands down.
Yeah, just like a sort of like tippy toes slippery doodah into the
Yeah, game, like as soon as I saw him falling in that way, I just was transported back to my early 20s seeing kids fall sideways off of the swoopy.
That's amazing. I really hope that was mo-capped in that way. Just get some floats in a swimming pool.
Yeah.
Fall over, mate. Just have a laugh.
Yeah. The other thing I've got that I really wanted to discuss was the Riddler. I thought his riddles were quite fun. When you go into a room and it gives you a little description, you had to go and like figure it out and take a picture of something.
Yeah, and it's to do with like the deeper Batman lore, and that'll usually unlock a bio about a character. Like that kind of fan really well service, done. Like reverence to the source material was one of the coolest things about this. But I know where you're going with the next bit.
The trophies are stupid. Yeah.
They are dumb that they exist. I don't hate them. They got better, I think, in the second game, because they thought of like more puzzle based ways to lock them away rather than just like you had to find them.
Well, that's it. He's called the Riddler, and he's just putting trophies in vents. Like that's not a riddle.
Yeah, it's not even a
puzzle.
Conceptually, it's dumb. It doesn't make any sense why he's done that in an asylum. Like, what is the point of it?
Well, a couple things.
With your trophies in the vents. We're having to clean out all the time, Riddler.
I get that it's a video game, and video games of this sort like to have collectibles, and it is the easiest way to do it.
Yeah.
Who is Riddler's supplier? Where is he getting these like custom-built Riddler trophies? Is he making them himself? Did he sit and make... And did the guards not notice that he had like 100 of them just piled up in his cell for when he could escape and scurry off into the vent?
Yeah, because you get the impression, and forgive me if I'm wrong, dear listener, but that he's not in Arkham Asylum. He's not there.
Oh, is he not?
I don't think so. Because it sounds as if he's just talking to you from elsewhere.
I thought I saw the inside of a cell covered in question marks at some point.
Okay, maybe he was then. Because if he's not there, then why is he just... What's he done? Just had a little day trip. I'm just visiting. You've been in here for 5 hours, mate. Who are you visiting now? Nowhere. No one. What's that massive like suitcase you've got behind you?
That burlap sack you're carrying around on over your shoulder is getting progressively smaller.
It's funny as well, because like we've got...
Well, so why is Batman collecting them? Just walk past them. They're not doing anything. They serve no purpose.
Yeah.
What do you get if you get them all? Do you get unlock something?
They some of them do upgrade things. You get upgrades for stuff. Like you know, if you go to the Riddler challenge page in your menu, some of the things will have like a little icon on them that shows you that you get some kind of upgrade for getting them, and it would like upgrade, I don't remember what it was, like certain parts of your kit would get upgraded just by doing them. But what's funny is that like, whereas we've played a game and watched a film where there are similarities in the tone of the thing, and like the sort of the more gritty psychological, you know, horror-ish parts of Batman in both of the things that we've played, the biggest like differentiation and the biggest gap between the two elements is that the Riddler's in both of these pieces of media, where one of them is full-on wacky moron, like, oh, Batman, you'll never find all my trophies. And then in the movie, he's a fucking absolute psychopath murderer. This one's just a fucking nuisance to the guards.
It's just a pest.
Yeah.
Apparently nothing happens if you find all the Riddler trophies. Right. So after you find all the trophies, a box comes up. Nothing happens if you just find the trophies. If you solve every riddle as well, you'll hear the Riddler on the radio, and he'll just get mad at you for doing it, and then he gets arrested.
So he's not in Arkham Asylum then, I assume, if he gets arrested.
No, he mustn't be.
So yeah, he did just leave him there and wait for you to go there on the off chance.
Luckily,
time Batman goes to Arkham Asylum, he's going to have some trophies to find, whenever that is. I don't mind a collectible. I think most of these collectibles, like even some of the Riddler trophies, like just finding them to go out off the beaten path a little bit, I wasn't that bothered by, because the overall game is quite linear and focused on this smaller area, that I would much rather play this type of game than the open world ones because they went too far with it. Mm-hmm. This is like the perfect type of setting and length and size of this type of game. I was really happy with all of that, which is why we kind of stuck to playing this one instead of Arkham Origins. Well, even in the way that it leads you quite a lot through where you're going, usually by having like, I'm going to go in this room and hopefully when I come out, the Joker's not left a box of those teeth again, because then I'll know exactly where to go. But they do.
Yeah,
that
he's another one
lot.
That I want to know his supplier. Who is he getting all these teeth from? Mm. How did he get them in there?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I do agree with you. I'm largely being facetious. I think like I do have that little bit in me that quite enjoys collecting trophies and riddles and stuff like that.
Yeah, the riddles, as we said, were excellent. Like,
they're really good.
A really cool idea for a collectible that actually makes sense within the universe of why they.
I think
would
there
be
are
the
one or two missable riddles, which
I
ruins the whole
some.
Thing for me.
Yeah,
which means I'm just not going to do any of them, basically, Batman. So because I don't see the point. If I can't complete it, I'm not going to do it.
I was playing on PC, and I'm getting, you know, if I'm not getting, because I tried to play the PS4/PS5 version of the Return to Arkham, but Arkham Asylum is locked at 30 FPS on that version, even on PS5. So no,
it's weird
not having that.
It makes no sense.
No, so I played it on PC, and I'm getting, what am I getting then? Steam achievements.
Yeah, you will be.
Steam achievements. I can give less of a shit about them. So it got to a point where I just thought, I've been looking for the riddles and the trophies, but why? I've already done this on 360. I'm pretty sure I almost 1,000 G'd it. So why would I bother? Like, just play the game.
Yeah,
mate,
if I could have gone back and got them all, because like I say, I quite like the idea of, I've got it in me and I do enjoy from time to time stick a podcast in and just go off and check them off, especially because you can find maps that show you where everything is. Happy to go and just like plug away at them. But as soon as there's missable ones and I know I've missed some, I was like, well, can't get them all, so why would I bother trying to really...
missable?
The one that that's jumping out in my head is after the Harley Quinn fight, when she locks you, when you get locked in the cell, you've got to blow your way out the back wall.
Yeah.
There's a thing, one of those sort of scarab beetles that you can take a picture of.
Right.
I forgot to take the picture of the scarab beetle, and once you leave, there's no way to get back into the cell.
Oh.
To retake that picture.
I see.
So that's the one that I know that's missable. I'm not sure if there's any more, anything else that gets locked off to you.
But
that one certainly felt it, because I tried to get back into it and I couldn't.
I mean, first time around, I clearly would have, once I got all the gadgets, would have then gone back through the asylum and unlocked all the paths that I couldn't previously get through with all the new gadgets that I did, because that's the spirit of a Metroidvania. And if I'm going to collect everything, I probably did do that, but I didn't want to do that this time because there's just no need. I've done it before.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. That is fair enough. Overall, though, excellent game.
Fantastic.
Highly atmospheric. I think it does show its age ever so slightly, in a number of ways. It's sort of interesting to go back, having now had subsequent sequels, to see the building blocks of things that they would later build on and improve upon. Like you're saying, like, we enjoyed the sneaking about sections, but they obviously built upon it in later games, which made it a much more rounded feature. And then when you look at games like today, like, I mean, you've played the most recent one, but like Spider-Man has taken that formula and built on it even further.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome game.
Yeah, and it definitely does hold up. Like, although, as you said, it shows its age, it's still incredibly playable. Like, it doesn't feel bad to play or anything. It just has elements that have been bettered by subsequent entries, but that doesn't mean that this version doesn't hold up. Like, it's, what, 2009, so it's 15 years old coming on. It doesn't feel old. Certainly if you're playing it on PC and you can get the graphic settings all the way up and 60 FPS and 4K and max settings, then it still looks pretty okay. The character models, as I said, look a bit shit and the lip syncing's a bit off, but the overall areas and the visual theme of the game holds up quite nicely.
Yeah, and I remember it at the time, and I would sort of largely stick with it today. It does a good job of, especially with the Riddler stuff that we've just spoken about, giving nods and winks to fans of the series, to the wider lore, without ramming it down people's throat. If you just like the movie Batman and you decide to get the game, you would have a perfectly fun time with it. You wouldn't really feel like you're missing anything. But then if you are a massive Batman nerd, there's a lot there I think you probably sit more Batman nerdy than I do, but I would imagine I'm somewhere in the middle of the and I see a lot, and I assume there's a lot that I don't pick up on that I would have got if I was even more of a nerd.
Yeah, yeah. It's just cool. It's just cool to see a licensed game. You asked the question earlier, you know, was this like the first, you know, brilliant licensed game or whatever? And there obviously were loads of those in the 16-bit eras and stuff, you know, E.T. Capcom and whatnot. Yeah, there have been good licensed games in all eras of gaming, but it's just really cool to see somebody take a license that they clearly love and they want so much to put so much respect and so many mm-hmm. references and fan service elements of that license in the game. That was such a cool part of why everyone loved this Batman game so much, because previous ones had been probably focused on like a film at the time and therefore just would just like really soullessly retread the beats of the film and then whatever. Mm-hmm. Whereas this one told its own story. It got known writers, known voice actors that were already working on Batman and had worked on Batman in the past. It took inspiration from the greatest works of Batman as well, and then just put like a ton of references and thought into how to expand that Batman license across every element of the game. And that was just such a cool thing to see somebody care that much about a licensed game, mm-hmm. which you hadn't always gotten, certainly in like the roundabout this era, like late PS2, this era as well, where they were just pumping out loads of shit like the Wii and all that stuff, full of absolute garbage.
Yeah.
This was like top tier.
Once upon a time, when a licensed game came out, you assumed it was bad until proven absolutely. Otherwise.
Yeah.
But I think that is largely gone now.
Did we probably even thought that about this? Batman had not had many very good games when this came out. Certainly not. No. Since like a couple of the SNES ones, maybe.
I remember playing one on my Sega Master System, on a 2D one that was quite fun, but I don't know if it was good or if it was just me being a kid enjoying it.
Yeah, I played a couple for when I was at Sega Mania. I played the Batman Returns, I think. No, Adventures of Batman and Robin, that's what it was. Both versions of that are both pretty decent, but
It's Batman Returns I had played that I quite enjoyed on Sega Master System.
Yeah, that was the same as the NES one, I think. Yeah, those games were okay. The 2D side-scrolling ones, they were fine. But mostly, like, through the sort of PS2 GameCube era, there was some absolute wank coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So I distinctly remember this almost feeling like it came out of absolutely nowhere. And people think it being like, holy shit, that Batman game's actually amazing. Like, it's a licensed mm-hmm. game and it's a Batman game, but this one's special. It's not what you think it's going to be. It's actually really good, kind of thing.
Fully agree. And now I'm falling down a memory hole looking at pictures of Batman Returns and Sega Master System, remembering all this.
Those games are fucking hard.
Yeah. I also used to play the Indiana Jones one, which also was brutally difficult.
What, the side-scrolling one?
Mm-hmm.
Is that
like this, you start off in a cave, and like the second level, you're on the back of a train.
That is really
with
really
a giraffe's
hard.
Head poking out.
Is that the same as like the Super Star Wars? Is that the same people?
Oh, I don't know. That's meant to be good, though. Super Star Wars, right?
Yeah, all three of those SNES Super Star Wars games are really good. Who were they made by? That was LucasArts, of course.
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Oh, okay.
That's the one I had.
Yeah,
had to climb ropes and shit.
Yeah, that one on the SNES, Greatest Adventures, has got fucking crazy scores. 8 out of 10 from IGN. Yeah.
Nice. That's IGN, though. Don't trust it. Don't trust it. And I guess that brings us to the end of another episode of the Winners You podcast. If you liked what you heard, and even if you didn't, why not give our numbers a bump by subscribing to our podcast on your podcast feed of choice? Or if you prefer to consume your podcast in a visual format, you can head over to YouTube and search a Winners You podcast, where you can subscribe to our YouTube channel. If the podcast isn't enough for you, you can also follow us on the website formerly known as Twitter at WinnerIsYouPod, and you can even send us an email to tell us how wrong we are about our gaming and movie opinions by writing to winnerisyoupod@gmail.com. Alex and I also have Not Twitter, at DavidSmiley1 and at SuperThrillix, and we have TikTok, so head over there and search a Winners You pod if you so wish. Alex, any housekeeping, or are we Batmaning out of here?
Let's Batman out of here.
And on that bombshell, I've been David, he has been Alex, and we have been a Winner's Shoe. And I'm out.
Keep gaming.